Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast, the practice owner's guide to maximize practice value and create personal financial success. Your host, Eric Miller, is the co-owner and chief advisor at Econologix Financial Advisors. He is also a national speaker and published author in financial matters focused on practice owners at every phase of ownership.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Financial Bees Podcast for veterinarians. This is where we teach veterinary owners how to harness the power of the practice, build plenty of personal wealth, and go out the top of your game. I'll be your host, Eric Miller, chief advisor, and I'm here with
Eric Gersh, financial advisor.
And today we're going to talk about debt today.
Yay.
Everyone seems to be so excited about this topic right here, but I don't know. I think it's probably super important for people to understand a little bit about it. And so we're going to talk about, we are definitely going to talk about like credit lines that every veterinary owner should have, both on the personal side and the business side. But I think we need to like first talk a little bit about the subject of debt, because it does elicit a ton of emotion around it.
It's important.
And it's something you got to know if you're going to operate in today's world. You're going to have to know about debt.
It's half the balance sheet.
Could be. So what did you learn about debt when you were growing up?
My parents were pretty conservative. Growing up, we had a mortgage, car loans, but they were very responsible. They didn't rack up credit cards and consumer debt like you see a lot of people do. So I would say I grew up with very good role models for utilizing debt.
But what was the overall message when it came to debt?
Pay it down.
Yeah.
Pay it down. Watch the interest rate. Refi when there's an opportunity, but don't refi into eternity. Pay it down still.
Yeah. So, and I think that's probably the message that most Americans probably get. That's probably what most veterinarians have been told, is to pay down, all their debt.
Yep.
And, while that's not incorrect in some circumstances, certainly there's going to be other circumstances where you utilize debt in a different way. And, you can utilize it correctly for expansion purposes as well. And, we just want to make sure you guys understand the difference between constructive debt and destructive debt and the difference between the two, so that you're not getting yourself over leveraged in areas that, obviously are going to make you feel wildly uncomfortable. So let's start with destructive debt. Now, I know when I went to school, they put Discover cards in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We rack those things up pretty quickly.
Yep.
And you learn a pretty hard lesson about destructive debt at that point in time, because when the interest rate turns to about 25%, you're just like, wow. So yeah. All my minimum payments are doing is just paying.
You're making $4 to $6 an hour at that point, depending on what year you were in school.
Yeah. That's probably what it was, about $4 to $6 an hour.
$1,000 on a Discover card is pretty hard to pay off at $4 an hour.
Yeah, that is absolutely terrifying when you think about that. That would be an example of destructive debt, right? Or, getting I heard they just are now allowing 40-year mortgages. Is that true? 40-year mortgages?
It's real. It's a pretty niche product, but it's...
Okay.
It's common.
So if you buy a $900,000 home over 40 years at a 7% interest rate, I'm going to imagine that your total out of pocket is going to be at least $1.8 million.
Yeah. I would say you're probably paying, without looking, 300 to 350% of the purchase price by the time you're done.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
And a 40-year mortgage, I mean, I'm trying not to laugh, but at that point, you're basically signing up to say, let's pay a mortgage through retirement.
That's crazy. Oh, my God.
You want to know what's worse than that?
What?
They've got a new thing. 7-year car loans.
Oh, I thought they had car loans for 10 years right now.
No, seven. Five. Five's always been the norm. 60 yeah. months, done.
Yeah.
Now they're drawing it out to seven.
Really?
But they're doing it on used cars too. You see people buying a, you know, Nissan Altima with 80,000 miles on it with a 7-year car loan. That car is going to be dead long before it's paid off. And now this person's underwater on a POS.
Oh my gosh, man.
Yep.
Okay. So this is why when you are buying an asset, you always have to have the mindset. If you're going to buy a home, like you should minimally target that thing. I mean, of course we tell you, we want you to have that thing paid off in 5 to 7 years, but realistically 15 years would be the longest.
I think that's fair.
That you should expect to have a home mortgage, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
And everyone can pay off their home in 15 years. If you can't pay off your home in 15 years, then it's too big of a home.
I was going to say, you've got too much home.
You can get a 30-year mortgage, you know, and then accelerate it, you know, if you want to kind of protect having a smaller payment in case times are tough.
Yeah.
But man, having something like that for, you know, an appreciating asset that you have a debt on for 10 to 20 or 40 years, that's crazy. Anyway. Okay. So I think that's destructive debt. That's destructive because that's going to soak up most of your income for a long period of time. And you're not getting value out of it.
It's not doing anything to make you money.
No. So that is our example of destructive debt. So anything consumption wise, obviously, that you're doing that is, you know, going to put you in that kind of a position, that's bad. Let's just go on the constructive debt side. So, you know, a lot of veterinarians borrow money. I mean, a lot of them do for a number of reasons. Maybe you guys want to acquire equipment. Maybe you want to acquire a practice. Maybe you want to buy real estate, whatever it is. But veterinarians definitely need to borrow money because it's very difficult to acquire an asset if you don't have access to lenders. Constructive debt, though, would be what? I mean, we talk about the three characteristics of constructive debt, which would be, you remember them?
Makes you money.
Yeah.
Gets you a tax write-off.
Yep.
And
let's see how good you are. Well, when you say makes you money, it provides cash flow.
Yep.
Right. It does give you a tax benefit. And then the asset goes up in value. Right. It can go up in value. It doesn't depreciate. That's the point. Right.
Okay.
So if you're going to borrow, those are the three things that you have to look at when you are, if you're going to borrow. Simple as that. And I think that when we start looking at what most people are doing, they don't necessarily look at debt that way. But those are what the smart people do.
And I think there's one exception to that rule,
which is that's
equipment for the practice, because that is going to bring in cash flow. That is going to get you a tax write-off. But in that case, it would be a depreciating asset.
Maybe the equipment, but the business, it would allow the business to appreciate. Because it's going to create more value for the business.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the actual individual leveraged asset needed to appreciate.
In that case, no, it wouldn't. But it would. You definitely get the tax benefit, but it does make the practice value higher, right? It yep. doesn't make the equipment higher, but it's the practice value is definitely higher because of that. So, yeah. All right, so let's talk about access to credit lines, because I'm a big believer that you should, if you're going to build personal assets and or whatever you're going to have, you obviously need to have access to credit lines. So we'll take the first, we'll go on the personal side first. So on the home, so I got a home.
Okay.
Let's say it's worth $500,000. Okay. I owe $250,000 on it. What can I get?
Home equity line of credit.
There you go. And why would I want to do that?
Because you have an instant source of liquidity if you need it.
Yep.
If there's an opportunity, if there's a emergency, the money's there.
Yep. So I think the loan of, so if you go to the bank right now, if I have $250,000 of equity, I think the banks are probably going to lend about 80% of the value of the home, right? So if I have a $500,000 home, they're going to immediately take 20% off the top.
Yep.
Right. So that would leave me with a
$400,000.
So then I owe $250,000. Yeah, so I'd be able to get what? 150
or so.
Yeah. Of a line of credit.
Yep.
And I don't have to use it.
No.
Doesn't cost me anything.
No, not if you're not borrowing.
Maybe an application fee, but it's just sitting there and I can access it. Now, what a lot of people do is they use it for home remodeling, vacations, cars, things like that.
Yep.
That's probably not the most wise thing to do.
No, but I have seen some cases. I had a client, had a bunch of credit cards, paid them off with their HELOC, and then actually didn't rack back up the credit cards, which was the key point.
Yeah.
Paid down the HELOC, saved a ton of money in interest, but that's a pretty risky move for some people. Cause if you just rack up those credit cards again, now you're in the same position, only twice as bad.
Yeah. So you'd have to make sure your discipline is in on that one. So yeah. If you got $50,000 of credit cards at 20%, I eat them up with a home equity line of credit at what? 6 or 7% right now. So that you can definitely win in that scenario, but you just got to make sure you keep your discipline in not to acquire more debt on that one for sure. But that's a home equity line of credit. You know, it's really simple. The house is the collateral. The line of credit is just a line of credit, just like a credit card, basically. And we've even had some people that have accelerated their home mortgage by utilizing the home equity line of credit. That's a whole different discussion though.
I'll let you explain that.
Nope, I'm not going to do it today. We'll do it. If there's any interest on that, which I doubt there would be, I don't even know if that's the workable anymore because interest rates are going up so much.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. I doubt it's workable.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be a workable solution. So that would be number one. So a home equity line of credit would be something that you would want to have. Let's say I got a brokerage account, TD Ameritrade, and I have $100,000 worth of securities in there. This is a non-qualified account, not like an IRA or a 401k. What can I get against that?
You could get a securities-backed line of credit, which is basically same thing as a HELOC, only instead of your house backing it, your brokerage account is backing it.
Yep. And
usually, depending on the holdings, they'll give you, you know, 50, maybe upwards to 70 cents on the dollar. So if you've got 100 grand in the account, they'll probably give you a line of credit for 50 to 70.
Yeah. And the interest rate's probably going to be pretty similar to the line of credit for the house. So 6 or 7%, somewhere around there.
Yep.
Obviously, it's better when interest rates are low because then the lines of credit are low. Yep. But, you know, right now that's not necessarily the case, but it's better than what credit cards are, you know, charging at this point in time. So, all right. In that example, it's the quality of the investments that's going to determine how much you can get.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to give you more credit if your account is conservative versus if, you know, you're in a bunch of super aggressive tech stocks, they're not going to give you 80 cents on the dollar.
No.
You know? They're going to give you 30 cents on the dollar. What? I don't know.
Yeah. So, you know, but look, I mean, you can, if you got stocks that are going up 50% a year and I can borrow at 7%, then, you know, that makes sense. You know, I think this is where a lot of people see these really big CEOs of these companies that their companies are going up like, you know, 100% every single year, 50% every single year. The CEOs are just borrowing, you know, against the and using the business as collateral for that. You know,
that's what Bezos, Musk, buy, borrow, die.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Buy.
They get the asset. They buy the business or build the business. They own the stock. They let it grow. They borrow against it. They never sell. They never incur taxes. And then they die.
Wow.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
But you need a lot of assets to make that workable. You know, you're not going to be able to pull that off with a, you know, $1 million brokerage account.
No. And the reason they do that obviously is because when you borrow money against an asset, that's not taxable income.
Exactly.
Right. So you don't have to pay any tax on the loan proceeds.
Yep.
Right. And that's the, that's why people do that like that. They've figured that out, you know, and that's just, that'd be a benefit of one of many benefits of having, you know, a company that is producing that much value is you could do that. I mean, as a strategy, I don't, you know, that's just, I think the, that makes some sense. You know, I'm going to take, you know, $2 million of income when my business is worth $100 million or $200 million and growing, you know, what do I care?
Yeah, if there's, it's negligible.
You know, if it, and it's probably worth, you know, $900 million. What do I care? You know, if there's some debt on there, big deal. But yeah, I can live my lifestyle pretty much tax-free and never really incur anything. So most of you guys aren't going to do that. So I don't even know why we're going there. But it is nice to know that you can get a securities-backed line of credit that that would be accessible to you. So the last personal assets would be life insurance. Okay. Now, you know, of course, we're big proponents of cash value life insurance for every owner that is of age, appropriate, health-wise, to have a policy that they're max funding. Because as you're putting cash in there, not only does the money grow without any potential loss.
Yeah, no downside risk.
Right. But you can access that money.
Yep.
You know, so
tax-free.
Yeah. Same thing. I mean, you can access the money, the inside the policy, you can pull it out, you can use it. I've had plenty of people that have used it to, you know, put a down payment on a piece of real estate, to buy another practice, to whatever it is, you know, you can utilize the cash value inside the policy. Cash stays in the policy.
Yeah. You're borrowing from the life insurance company, not from, you know, your own policy.
Yeah. And the rates on them right now are pretty good.
Oh yeah. They're like 4.5%. I mean, you're not finding debt that cheap anywhere.
You know what mine is?
Let me guess. 3.5?
2.75.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. 2.75. I can borrow against my policy.
It's like a trip down memory lane in 2020.
So that's pretty cool. And look, it doesn't mean that you're going to, but it's an asset that you guys can leverage if you need to for something, for acquisition of other assets. So you get the good habits in place of saving so that you can and accumulate money. And then when there's an opportunity, you can strike. And you can do it quickly because it doesn't take but what, like 5-7 days to get the money out.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to go through an application. You don't have to go through like, you know, a loan process that you would typically go through. Like if you're going to go to a bank, like if I go to Bank of America, you know, and I'm a veterinarian to go get a loan. All right. Dude, that's
weeks,
if not months of approval. Of, you know, doing exams on my finances to make sure that, you know, it's months.
Submitting documents,
submitting
taxes and
all that. Yep. So that is, that's what we're trying to avoid. You guys have, you know, access to money pretty quickly. Okay. So that's on the personal side. Anything else on the personal side that you can borrow against that? So we got securities back line of credit, home equity line of credit. And then if you have an insurance policy, cash value life insurance policy,
yeah, that's really it.
You can borrow against that. Okay. On the business side, primarily it would just be what a business line of credit.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
But look, your business has to be in a relatively good shape in order to qualify for that.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to be profitable. You need to have money in the bank. I mean, it's no different than getting debt on the personal side. You have to be someone who's attractive to lend to.
Yeah. So if you're sitting there with, you know, tons of debt and a profit margin at 3%, you know, it's you're probably not going to look that attractive to a lender.
No.
So you guys got to tell a story to the people that you're borrowing from, you know, that you're trustworthy, that you keep your obligations. You know, that you have clean balance sheets and that you can provide your reports quickly, you know, and all of these things, and that you're profitable if you guys want access to lines of credit. It's just that simple, you know, and this is, you know, look, you need to get a business line of credit. You should. Doesn't mean you need to use it, but you should have it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So when I look at why you would want to have all these lines of credit, it is not when everything's going great.
Yeah, it's when everything's going bad.
It's when everything's going bad.
It's just the security of having near instant access to multiple buckets of money.
Yeah. So you're in a position where, okay, let's say I'm a veterinarian and all of a sudden I lose two vets.
Ouch.
Right?
Yep.
And how much is a vet worth?
800.
Yeah. A production. And I don't have that anymore.
Yeah. That's over $1.5 million.
Gone. So I need to tap into something, you know, or cut my expenses drastically or hire really quickly. Right. But I'm probably going to need access to some money.
Yeah. You're going to, in that situation, you're going to need something to tide you over temporarily, even if you hire fast.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're not just going to walk in there and do $800,000 of production. They're going to learn the system. So this is why we tell you guys to have at least 2 months of business savings to be able to handle an emergency, yep. Right? And
I'd say use those first, then start going into your lines of credit.
And yeah. I mean,
lines of credit should be the backup to the reserves.
Right. There should definitely have reserves in there to help you tide you over. But you need a backup to the backup. And, you know, if I have another $150,000 business line of credit that I can dip into, but I can assure you, if you go to a bank and say, and I walk in there to Mr. Banker and I said, "Hi, Mr. Banker, I just lost two veterinarians, you know, and I need $150,000 line of credit." What do you think he's going to say?
It's not too attractive of a situation to lend in.
Yeah, they're going to be like, yeah, we're going to pass on this one right now.
You're basically walking in there and saying, "Hey, I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. Can I borrow money?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is why we want to get lines of credit against assets that you have, why the financial seas are calm. You know, don't wait until there's an emergency to go do that. And there are look, and not only that, but you should get relationships with lenders in your industry. And, you know, within the veterinary industry, there's plenty of lenders out there.
Yeah, there's a couple big ones,
you know, that you can have access to. And if you call us up, we can certainly give you guys resources to, you know, lenders that we would recommend. But man, you need to make sure that you have access to all these different lines of credit because you just never know when something bad's going to happen. And it's happened before. You know, I've had, I had a vet that had a rogue employee that reported them to the board and they got sued, you know, or not, they didn't get sued, but they got fined,
yep.
You know, and you just don't know where the attack's going to come from. That could cost you quite a bit of money. Last thing, student loan debt.
Everyone's favorite.
Yeah. What do you do about it? So I was talking to another advisor and, you know, it's unprecedented what some of these veterinarians are walking out of school with right now, as far as debt is concerned.
Yeah, it's scary.
You know, and when typically I think, you know, guys my age in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s, when we went to school, you know, and we got out and there was debt there because there were student loan debt isn't a new phenomenon. It's been around a while, right? And, you know, most of what I saw them do was I'm just going to work like mad. I'm going to still live like a student. I'm not going to buy anything, you know, too expensive. I'm going to pay off this debt as quickly as I can. And by and large, most of them were very, very successful financially, you know, because they did that. My problem is that the amounts that they had to confront were a lot less.
Yeah, school.
It's one thing to have, you know, $40,000 of student loan debt.
Yeah, right? That's another thing. I see people with $250,000, $300,000.
Yeah. And even back then, maybe they're making $60,000 or $70,000. Yeah. That's confrontable to be able to pay that off, you know, in a couple years,
yeah.
You know, in three or 4 years and say, I'm not going to be extravagant. But when you're walking out with like $400,000 or $300,000,
it's a house.
And you're still and you're only making 120, maybe
if that out of school.
That's tough. Yeah. That's tough. So I don't know. I don't know. There's a good solution on that. I mean, it's probably a combination. I think you should do both. I think there's, you should have a viewpoint of I'm going to really, really, I'm going to try to outwork this, you know, and maybe this jumps you into ownership as well, because it's going to be tough for you as a, if you're just a veterinarian that just wants to be an associate, to pay that off quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
it's going to be,
I don't know if there's a good solution to that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I think you said it best. Ownership is probably the best route to it, because now you can make the profits of the practice and truly attack the debt. I mean, when you're just bringing in a salary, I mean, by the time you pay to live, pay your student loans, I mean, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. That part, I'm not really sure what there's going to be a good solution on that one.
Yeah.
I would definitely try not to rack up as much debt if it's possible.
I think that's the important point is when you're going through school, try to minimize the debt. I mean, in hindsight, it's 2020, of course, but
you don't think about that when you're a 20. Yeah. I know
I didn't.
I didn't either. I mean, that's the thing. It was like, oh, whatever. I mean, I'll just, pay it off, but it was only probably 20 or 30,000 when I was out. It's almost 10 times that.
Yeah.
So it is a crazy situation, but there's probably not a good answer to it. It's a pretty, really broken system. And, I don't know how it's going to end, quite frankly. So,
yeah, I don't either, but there's going to be a point.
Yeah. There'll definitely be
something's going to change.
Anything else on debt?
No, I think that pretty well covers it.
Yeah, I think we did. Okay, so guys, look, I mean, debt is definitely something that you can utilize. Be worthy of it, first and foremost. Make sure that you're keeping yourself and your personal finances in good order so that you look good to a lender. We are going to need lenders. Lenders are not all bad. Bankers are not all bad. They do allow you to expand if you have the courage to do so, and you can access the capital there to acquire something. As long as you're doing it for things that you have some control over the outcome, then that is the probabilities are high you're going to have success. It's when you borrow for things that you don't know really what the outcomes are going to be, and you're putting your life, your financial life, in somebody else's hands, that's probably when you're going to have a negative outcome. So just be mindful of how you utilize debt, and you definitely can win in the long run. Okay. We'll see you guys on the next podcast. Be well, and we'll talk to you soon.
You have been listening to the Financial Beast podcast, where we talk about how to turn practice profits into personal financial wealth. For more information on how to become a financial beast in practice ownership, visit financialbeastpodcast.com. You may also want to call the office at 727-588-1540 to request more information on becoming a client or arrange to have Eric speak at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or financialbeastpodcast.com.